All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am talking about the re-signing of a kicker and a punter, as well as the return of Drew Brees, what that means for the Saints, as well as what that could mean for the Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. With today's episode, I am coming at you to talk about the re-signing of punter Ryan Allen and kicker Younghoe Koo. We will then get into the other big news of the day around the NFL that certainly directly affects the Falcons, which is that Drew Brees announced that he is planning to come back this season, which is not a surprise to, I think, most people. And we'll talk about sort of what that means for the Saints and whether they're much predicted, certainly by Falcon fans, you know, inevitable downfall due to this decision by Drew Brees is as imminent as maybe people want them to believe, as well as sort of looking at sort of the Saints making this run in the twilight of Brees' career and what sort of lessons can be learned for that that could apply to the Falcons when we get to a point in Matt Ryan's career where he is in the twilight of his career, and maybe ways that the Falcons can capitalize on that in a similar manner or capitalize it in a better manner than what the Saints have done in recent years. But that is going to be the gist of the show later on. But first, let's get into the talk about, you know, that all meaningful position group called special teams. It does matter. That is your Locked On Falcons lead story. The Atlanta Falcons were able to provide some stability to their kicking game on Tuesday when they announced the extensions for the team's incumbent kicker Younghoe Koo and punter Ryan Allen. Koo is an impending exclusive rights free agent, meaning that his contract has now expired with two or less years of NFL experience. The Falcons are likely re-signing him to a veteran minimum deal. Allen is also an impending free agent, but an unrestricted one, meaning that he has four or more years of experience and two likely got a veteran minimum deal. Allen was signed midway through 2019 after the second groin injury that sidelined longtime Falcons punter Matt Bosher late in the year. Matt Bosher is also a free agent like Allen, but with Allen's re-signing seemingly virtually ends his 9-year stint as the Falcons punter, given that the Falcons already signed another punter earlier this month in Sam Irwin Hill. Irwin Hill is an Australian native that the Falcons initially signed earlier in 2019, but due to issues with his visa, wasn't able to join the team immediately, which then pushed the Falcons in another direction as far as replacing an injured Bosher that ultimately culminated later in the year with Allen's additions. Now that two punters are currently on the Falcons roster, that's more than enough to compete, which means that Bosher's time in Atlanta is probably at an end. It's likely that the Falcons will also add another kicker into the mix at some point this offseason to compete with Koo at that spot. Certainly, it seems like the Falcons have learned their lessons from Giorgio Tavecchio from a year ago. Usually the Falcons at this point in time in calendar year in February are making moves like this. Basically, they're reaching out to several of their impending free agents that will become free agents come March 18th when the new league year starts. But they sort of reach out to those guys, offer them sort of 1-year veteran minimum deals, and whoever's willing to accept those deals will get, you know, these quote unquote contract extensions at this point in time, because technically their contract is being extended because it hasn't officially expired. It won't expire until March 18th. We saw the team do this last year with guys like Steven Means and Bruce Carter and Bleedy Ray Wilson. What's interesting about these sets of moves to bring a kicker and punter back is, as I said, it's sort of prompting what will likely be an open competition between two competitors later this summer in training camp. At the kicking position, the Falcons haven't had an open competition like this since the 2007 season. They haven't had an open competition like this at the punter position since 2005. And so, you know, you're going to have this summer, presumably, Koo and a kicker to be determined, along with Allen and Irwin Hill competing directly for the job and having that open competition, that's going to be something relatively new to the team that we haven't experienced in more than a decade. And part of the reason why the Falcons haven't had that is because they've had relative stability at that kicker and punting positions in that period of time. You know, at the punter position, you know, that was thanks to Bosher over the last nine seasons, and the five or six seasons prior to that was due to Michael Kanin, who actually won that punting competition back in 2005 and held that job for the next several years. And of course, kicker, you had the stability brought by Matt Bryant since the 2009 season until this past year. We saw Bryant get pushed out the door last year, hoping that the Falcons hoping that Giorgio Tavecchio could replace him, only to have that sort of blow up in their face when Tavecchio struggled in last summer's training camp. Then they brought Bryant back. He also struggled, particularly with the long field goals during the regular season. And the team ultimately replaced him with Koo, who is a sort of Georgia native, having gone to Georgia Southern. It's been, you know, a pretty uncharacteristically wild ride for the Falcons at both the kicker and punter spot over the last 6 months. And hopefully these moves will help settle things down as we approach training camp. So we will continue today's podcast by talking about Drew Brees' return and sort of whether or not the Saints are going to be helped or hurt by that, because I've seen a lot of people, particularly Falcon fans on Twitter, sort of discussing like, oh, this move is going to ruin the Saints, and sort of we'll actually look at the evidence, and is that wishful thinking, or is there actually a kernel of truth to that, that maybe, you know, this move could wind up ruining the Saints? And we'll get into that on today's episode. But today's episode is sponsored by Blue Chew, and we know that confidence is key to the kicking game, but no matter how much confidence you have in the Falcons kicking game, you can gain a little bit of extra confidence in the bedroom by checking out BlueChew.com. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they'll work up to twice as fast as a pill. Blue Chew is prescribed online by licensed physicians, so you don't have to go to the doctor's office or wait in line at the pharmacy. It's shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, it's cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, you can take advantage of this special offer by visiting BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, and faster choice. In my infinite snark, I see a lot of Falcon fans, and I've seen a lot of Falcon fans over the years, always sort of predicting the imminent demise of the Saints, largely due to what I think is mistakes of believing how incredibly restrictive the salary cap is. And I know the Falcons' own situation kind of lends people to think the salary cap is this, you know, unconquerable monster that can't be overcome. But the Saints have sort of proven over the last several years that they can overcome that. And I think a lot of people over these last couple of off seasons always seem Falcon fans always sort of predict the demise of the Saints sort of has me scratching my head. You know, it's wishful thinking, I think, in a lot of ways, and we'll get into it. And again, I'm not out here trying to sit here and be like, oh, the Saints are wonderful and great. I'm trying to sit here and explain to you guys why, despite everybody's desires for the Saints to have this imminent demise, and how, why they're going to crash and burn and all these various things that Falcon fans and other NFC South fans and you know, increasingly Viking and Seahawk fans and wherever else that Saints fans tend to, you know, tick people off. But, you know, I think why they haven't been able to crash and burn, I think there's lessons in that. I think there's a lot to learn, not only that the salary cap is a speed bump, but you have to kind of look at sort of what makes or breaks the Saints' success. And, you know, it's really their defense, and we'll get into exactly why. But when you look back at the Saints team, they've had a top 10 offense, in at least in terms of measuring by yards, for 14 straight seasons. They've been top 10 in points in 12 out of the last 14 years. Again, that 14 years is ever since Sean Payton's been there, as well as Drew Brees. And the two exceptions when they weren't a top 10 scoring offense were in 2007, 2010, when they were 12th and 11th respectively. Really, the only thing that's really stopping the Saints from being a good team on offense is an injury to Drew Brees. And we saw that last year where he missed five games and Teddy Bridgewater stepped in and they won all five of those games. But they didn't really change their offense. They were still kind of that dink and dunk, run heavy sort of attack that they've been the last couple of years under Brees. It was the same under Bridgewater. And while I think it's fair to sort of wonder, okay, is Drew Brees' durability going to be the same now that he's at age 41 as it was in previous years? I think that's fair to question that. But, you know, missing those five games last year kind of in the bigger picture was kind of a bit of a fluke. Prior to that, in the previous 13 years, he had missed one game due to injury in that all that time. And, the injury that he suffered last year came on a play that was kind of fluky because he threw a pass and Aaron Donald basically high-fived him on his follow through and he wound up injuring his thumb that way. And, you know, I think a lot of people will take the tactic of like, okay, well, Bridgewater's going to walk out the door in free agency this year and they're not going to have a capable backup and, you know, they're screwed. And what happens if Breeze gets hurt? And I'm like, well, I don't know if they're really that screwed because, you know, they still have Sean Payton, and Sean Payton was successfully able to make Luke McCown of all people into a competent backup quarterback for that one game, you know, back in 2015 where Drew Brees missed it due to injury. And that came against the ultimately NFC Championship Carolina Panthers. And McCown had that team, you know, driving in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter with an opportunity to have the go ahead touchdown in the final minutes. And it wound up resulting in a pick to Josh Norman. He underthrew the pass. Josh Norman made a highlight reel grab to sort of seal that Panthers win. But, you know, the Saints were basically a yard. If McCown had put a yard more of touch on that ball, you know, that's a touchdown. They potentially win the game. And so the fact that Sean Payton was able to make a 34-year-old Luke McCown into a viable backup option capable of going toe-to-toe with what was the best team in the NFC that year tells you that I don't necessarily think that the Saints need a high-level player to have an effective backup to Drew Brees. And, you know, we're not talking about Josh McCown. We're talking about Luke McCown. Luke McCown, who was the backup to Blaine Gabbert. Luke McCown, who spent that 1 year as Matt Ryan's backup after the Falcons decided to turn the page on Chris Redmond. We're talking about Luke McCown. And so we can sit here and hate on Sean Payton and think he's a terrible human being all we want, which he is. But the dude is an extremely competent head coach and an extremely competent offensive coordinator. You know, and I think acting like the Saints' downfall is imminent, as long as Sean Payton's there, as long as Drew Brees is there, I'm like, I think this is more wishful thinking than anything. What ultimately makes or breaks the Saints is their defense. That their success, you can track it almost perfectly to when they have good defense, they're a playoff team. When they have bad defense, they're 7-9. And here's the numbers for you, right? The Saints have had a top 15 ranked defense in points allowed 7 times in Payton's 14 years there. They've made the playoffs in all 7 of those years. They've won the division in 5 of those years, and they've won 10 or more games in all 7 of those years with an average number of 11.7 wins across those 7 years. And the other 7 years where Sean Payton has been the head coach, they've had a bottom 15 defense. They've made the playoffs just one time. They've won 7 or 8 games in 6 of those 7 years. The one exception was the Super Bowl winning year back in 2009, where they had the 20th ranked defense in terms of scoring, but they were second in turnover margin that year and, of course, won 13 games in the regular season before going on and winning the Super Bowl, right? And so even that 1 year where they had a below-average defense in 2009 from, you know, points allowed, they had a very opportunistic defense because that defense was consistently creating like 2 or more turnovers every single week, which was giving their offense more points. So they were basically, you know, they were giving up points, but they were winning games like 34-23 or something like that. So it was like, you know, even though they're giving up more points than the average team in the league, it's not like it's really affecting their ability to win football games. And so, like, if you're going to predict the imminent demise of the Saints, it's not going to be because you think Drew Brees is past his prime, because, again, Sean Payton's going to be able to basically get Drew Brees' corpse, you know, he's going to be able to drag that along. And, I don't think Drew Brees is going to all of a sudden fall off a cliff at this point in time in his career. Even for people that are using Tom Brady as an example, because Tom Brady's like a year or two older than Drew Brees and has declined in recent years, it's not as if Tom Brady is incapable of keeping that Patriot team from winning games. It's just, you know, it's really become more and more important that the supporting cast around Tom Brady is really good. And when you look at the Saints, their supporting cast on offense at this point in time is still really good and only likely to get better, particularly if they wind up, you know, getting a playmaking wide receiver to line up across from Michael Thomas and also solve some of their issues at the left guard position to get the final piece where they already have 4 really outstanding players on their offensive line already. And that's the 5th and final piece there they need. But looking at the defensive side of the ball, they've been able to really have a solid front. Now, if you're going to predict that Cam Jordan's going to fall off a cliff, or guys like, you know, I know that David Onyemata's hitting free agency. Sheldon Rankins is coming off another injury-plagued season. So you can sit there and say, okay, they have some concerns along their defensive line. But again, they still have Cam Jordan. Marcus Davenport, you know, is coming into his own. Trey Hendrickson stepped in well for him. They have a couple of pieces on their D-tackle group, Malcolm Brown, Mario Edwards. So it's not like the cupboard is completely bare, particularly even if they do lose Onyemata and Sheldon Rankins isn't quite the same that he has been in recent years at that D-tackle spot. You know, they still have a really good linebacker in Demoriel Davis. Yeah, they need some more help at that position, but they can just add like an athletic, you know, third-round guy there, and they'll be fine. We've seen this Saints defense make Manti Te'o into a competent, you know, performer for them. A.J. Klein, who are basically like mid-level veteran type of players, Craig Robertson being another example. So I don't feel like it's going to be that much for them to be able to find a competent player. I mean, hell, Demoriel Davis wasn't exactly lighting the world on fire in New York prior to landing in New Orleans, and has, you know, really turned into a monster for them, at least was last year. And really, ultimately, I don't think the linebacker position is all that important in their defense. Marshawn Lattimore is coming back. And you're sitting there saying, oh, well, they got a massive hole at the other cornerback position. It's a problem spot. You know, Eli Apple and P.J. Williams are free agents. Janoris Jenkins and Patrick Robinson, they could wind up being cap cuts, which is, again, one of the reasons why, you know, I think they could free up like $15 million in cap space just by cutting those two guys, which is part of the reason why I think when people point to the cap being so restrictive, I'm like, you guys don't understand how the Saints have structured these deals. But anyway, the thing I will say, the response I will have to that is saying like, oh, there's a problem area at cornerback. There was a problem area at cornerback last year, and it didn't stop them from being good. You know, like, that's the thing. Like, this was already a need, regardless of whether or not they were going to wind up replacing those guys or keeping those guys or cutting those guys anyway. So, you know, if they nab a quality corner in round one, boom, they've solved that problem for the most part. And then, you know, safety position, they have Marcus Williams and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who was one of the better rookie players really in the league last year. And so even if they do lose Von Bell in free agency, you know, they already have his ready-made replacement ready to go. So I don't feel like this Saints team's defense is going to be in, you know, is any imminent demise is oncoming for them. You know, I think really what their issue is going to be is more of a long-term issue, which is after the season, they're going to have to make decisions about whether or not to pay guys like Marshawn Lattimore, Marcus Williams, Demoriel Davis is also a free agent. Sheldon Rankins is also a free agent. So some of these guys that have been, you know, basically playing for cheap these last couple of years, which has been instrumental to their success, they're going to have to pay these guys. And you got guys like Lattimore, you know, Ramchek, Kamara, all these guys' contracts are coming up. And so they're going to have to start paying some of these young phenoms that they have on both sides of the ball. And that's going to get them into some issues in the future. And so I think once they start to pay those guys, then I think it's going to be a lot harder for them to maintain those guys. But that's not going to happen in 2020. That's going to happen in 2021, 2022, when those guys' salaries start to get up, you know, higher and whatnot. So I think eventually their downfall is coming. I certainly think that's fair to say, but I think if people are acting like it's imminent, like right now, like I think we're probably two or more years away from the Saints sort of falling off a cliff. And frankly, do the Saints really care if they fall off a cliff at that point in time? Not really. Not if they win a Super Bowl between now and then, you know, and they shouldn't care. Who cares if you're 6-10 in 2023 if you've won a Super Bowl in 2020? So I think that's the strategy that the Saints are sort of in. Where it applies to the Falcons, this is not all for me to say all this to, you know, talk up the Saints or anything like that. It's just sit here and lay out sort of the reality of the situation is like this applies to the Falcons. And I think there are lessons in that and sort of how the Saints have been able to find success in recent years and maintain that success in recent years for eventually when the Falcons may have to go a similar sort of circumstance when Matt Ryan reaches that point in his career. And we'll talk about that coming up on today's podcast. But before we get there, I should go ahead and plug Ross Jackson of the Locked On Saints podcast, who I'm sure is sharing his insights into the impact of Drew Brees returning. You guys heard Ross on last week's Ultimate Divisional Crossover. And so if you want to hear more of Ross, go check out the Locked On Saints podcast on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So the question I think is worth asking is, why did the Saints suddenly go from a team that went 7-9 for three straight seasons to now a team that has been potentially one of the top seeds in the NFC for the last 3 years that has, you know, obvious Super Bowl aspirations? And I think the simple answer is good personnel moves, but mostly good drafting. And it wasn't as if they were a bad drafting team prior to that, but I don't think they had a lot of success drafting from like 2012 to 2015. And you couple that with a bunch of poor free agent signings that they made during that time, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Again, because going back to what I said earlier, you know, their defense kind of drives the bus in terms of whether or not they're a playoff team versus an also ran. And you look at some of the signings that they had in that span of years from like 2012 to 2015 with guys like Curtis Lofton and Jairus Byrd and Keenan Lewis and Brandon Browner. You know, those guys didn't have quite the impact that I think the Saints were expecting those guys to have to really help improve those defenses in those years. And it didn't quite work out. And it really didn't change until 2017 when Marshawn Lattimore and Marcus Williams were their top two picks. And those guys really did a number to help revamp that defense. You had Cam Jordan going into that year. It was the seventh year in the NFL, but really ascended to another level as one of the best players in the NFL starting in 2017. And then you had these big second-year jumps also on the defensive line with guys like Sheldon Rankins and David Onyemata, who were drafted in the first and fourth rounds in the previous draft. And so what you did with that offseason was you now had a really solid front four with guys like Jordan and Rankins and Onyemata anchoring that group. And then they wound up going after Marcus Davenport the following offseason to sort of be the quote-unquote final piece to that puzzle. And then you had a secondary that was really strong that was capable of playing with a lead. It's basically what happened. And I think what this applies to with the Falcons is this notion of sort of how big is their window and what really is their window. And I've sort of been pushing back against with a lot of people's opinions over the last year or so, which is this idea that the Falcons window is about to close. And I don't really think it's about that. I think the Falcons have an opportunity in front of them to really open up a window similar to what we've seen with the Saints over the last 3+ years, where they actually have a chance to be competing at the highest levels for over multiple seasons. And it's going to take, you know, good drafting for the Falcons, you know, moving forward. It's going to take, this offseason is going to be critical, in my opinion, to the team being able to achieve that. Because when this group starts to grow, you know, again, the thing is, you're not often going to get instant impact like the Saints were able to get in their 2017 draft class, but you could hopefully get guys to make big jumps in year two, year three, and whatnot. And so when, you know, the 2020 draft class, when the 2021 draft class, when they get to their second and third years, around that point in time, you want to be in a situation similar to what the Saints have been in these last couple of years and competing at the highest levels. At some point in the not too distant future, the Falcons are going to reach a point where they're in the same boat as the Saints have been these last couple of years with wondering whether Breeze was going to come back. And the Falcons are going to be in a similar boat with Matt Ryan. This is like, we're going to be having the conversation at this time in future Februaries of like, is this going to be Matt Ryan's last year? What is the Falcons' plan beyond Matt Ryan? And I think we're going to be in that same situation, you know, whether that's 3 to 5 years from now, whenever that point is. You know, we're going to be in a situation where Matt Ryan, Julio Jones aren't going to be the guys that they once were. They're not going to be the guys that are carrying the team. And you can certainly say that Drew Brees has declined in recent years. I would agree 1,000% with you. He is not a guy that can carry a team anymore. He is a part of the puzzle. He's an important part, an integral part to that puzzle. But, it's all about the supporting cast, and you got to put the right supporting cast around him. I think the Saints have successfully been able to do that these last couple of years. And the question remains, can the Falcons do the same thing? Now, I think the positive thing with the Falcons is offensively, they're in a relatively good place. It's not done, but they're in a relatively good place because of the investments they've made on the offensive line that 3 to 5 years from now, when Matt Ryan and Julio Jones are on their last legs, presumably, you know, that's going to be Lindstrom and McGarry prime years. That's going to be Jake Matthews still playing at a reasonably high level. Hopefully they can add a center, you know, that can be the heir apparent to Alex Mack that 3 to 5 years, he'll be entering his prime as a quality player. And you have a similar dynamic of four really solid offensive linemen, similar to what you see with the Saints right now, with guys like Armstead and Ramchek and Eric McCoy and Larry Warford, And, you know, it becomes infinitely easier to find a capable left guard at that point in time than it, you know, when you already have four good pieces than necessarily needing to find two or three or more good pieces. And then at that point in time, you're hoping that Austin Hooper or whoever is the tight end and along with Calvin Ridley are bigger pieces of the passing game than necessarily probably declining Julio Jones at that point. You hope that the running back that everybody, I think, or many people are assuming the Falcons are going to target in this year's draft by that point in time will be, you know, approaching the end of his rookie contract, but will be sort of at his peak as sort of that, you know, workhorse type of running back that you can center the running game on. Because again, Matt Ryan's not going to be as capable of dropping back and throwing the ball 40 times every single week and winning that game. And you're going to have to rely a lot more heavily on your running game. And hopefully that's the type of offense that you're going to have. So I think, again, the Falcons have a really solid foundation that they continue to build upon for their offense for the next coming years. From a talent standpoint, the question really on the offensive side of the ball is who's going to be calling the plays, and whether or not that guy is going to be capable of maximizing whatever potential that they do have on the roster from a talent standpoint. On the flip side, you look at the defense, and I think the defense is a major concern. You know, I don't know who's going to be on this defense 3 to 5 years from now. I'm pretty confident Grady Jarrett will be. I'm pretty confident Deion Jones will be. But everybody else, I think, is pretty much up in the air. You're probably not looking at guys like Trufant and Allen, you know, just given age. You know, you don't know about Keanu Neal at this point in time. Isaiah Oliver, Kendall Sheffield, Demonte Casey, Olakun, Tack, Kaminsky, Sanat, you know, are any of these guys going to be key difference makers on those defenses 3 to 5 years from now? I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced that we're not talking about the Falcons versions of players like Patrick Robinson and John Jenkins and Stanley Jean Baptiste and Stephon Anthony and Haoli Kakaha, et cetera. You know, these guys the Saints use premium picks on in those years from like 2010 to 2015 or whatever the case may be, that they thought were going to grow into difference makers for their defense, but really didn't. And I don't know if any of those guys I just named are going to be those long-term difference makers for us. You know, and I think that's a big question that the Falcons are going to have to answer. And I don't necessarily know if you can expect them to sort of get all of those pieces in this one draft. I think it's going to take more than one draft to do that. But it's part of the reason why when anybody says like, oh, we should trade up for this guy or, you know, particularly Chase Young, and why I sort of kind of balk at that, because I just kind of think it's a pretty silly idea, because you're going to need potentially those assets that you're going to have over the next couple of drafts, those premium assets that you'll be trading away, whether it's to get Chase Young, whether it's to get, you know, Derek Brown or somebody else high in this draft. You're trading those away for the short-term gains, but it's going to kill your long-term. Because again, if guys like Sheffield, like basically if you wind up trading for Chase Young, then guys like Oliver and Sheffield and Casey and Olakun and Tack and Kaminsky and Sanat and all these guys, they have to be good. Because you're not going to have the assets to replace those guys if they're just wind up being slightly better versions of what they are today, which I think most of us would agree with. Most of those guys isn't necessarily players that we see right now contributing on a high level defense that at least is capable of, you know, they can be role players on that defense, but I don't necessarily know if like, oh, that guy's a key asset in the same way that we see guys like Alford and Trufant and Allen and Neal and Jones and Poe and Jarrett and all these other guys in recent years. So I think really the big question for the Falcons right now is for their future is you have to ask yourself when we get to Matt Ryan's twilight, you know, when he's 38, 39 or whatever in several years, are we going to be the LA Chargers with Phillip Rivers and also ran that may have one or two decent runs in them? Or are we going to be the Saints with Drew Brees, who are a legit contender and have, you know, potentially 3 to 5 runs in them? And obviously, you know, if you want to maximize your chances of winning a Super Bowl, getting 3 to 5 bites at the apple is a lot better than getting one or two. I don't know if the Falcons are in as ideal a situation because they don't have a Sean Payton that's going to be provide that stability on offense that you get with Sean Payton, as I discussed with their sort of 14-year streak of having a really good offense every single year. You know, even in a world where I think Dan Quinn sort of has his team competing again and back in the playoffs, manages to keep his job, I don't know if you're going to get that sort of stability on either side of the ball, offense or defense, from Dan Quinn. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to do after last year was kind of move on from Dan Quinn, because I thought 2019 was sort of the chance that Dan Quinn had to sort of prove that he could provide that stability. And when that didn't happen, you know, I kind of am and was out on Dan Quinn. And it's similar to sort of how I was coming off of the heels of that 2013 season with Mike Smith. And it wasn't that I thought like Mike Smith was a terrible coach or Dan Quinn's a terrible coach. It just, I don't know if those guys were or are the coach that I hoped they would be. They're just kind of a certain kind of coach. You know, with Mike Smith, it was like, you know, he can't really make adjustments. If he has the right team, the right talent, he can, you know, that Falcon team can be a high level team, as we saw those first 5 years there. But then when that team wasn't there in 2013 and 2014 due to injuries and subpar talent, the declining talent due to age and retirement and poor free agent signings, sort of that accumulative effect of declining the talent, you didn't see the same success. And, you know, I look at Dan Quinn and I'm saying, like, you know, the lesson I've learned over the last 5 years is like, if he doesn't have a reliable, stable offense, there's not a whole lot there for him. And certainly I don't have a lot of confidence right now that Dirk Cutter is going to provide that. And even if Dan Quinn does keep, you know, we'll see, but, you know, hopefully Dan Quinn will be able to prove me wrong. You know, he gets another shot to prove me wrong. And, you know, the hope that I think a lot of people, and understandably, are sort of pinning their hopes on is how the defense performed in the second half of 2019, where it wasn't really the offense that was driving the bus. It was the defense driving the bus. And I think people are hoping and wanting to see that continue into 2020. Of course, I'm skeptical of that, as I am always skeptical of all things Falcons. But, you know, I don't know if they can do what they did over those final eight games over the course of the next 16 games, particularly because I don't think they're going to have the benefit of facing Kyle Allen twice or Gardner Minshew, or as well as, you know, turnover prone Jameis Winston. So I think that's going to be sort of the interesting dynamic to see sort of what happens this year. But, you know, regardless of how you feel about the Saints, you know, I think they're a team, in addition to a team like the Patriots, that have handled the twilight of their quarterback as well as you possibly can. And I think rather than necessarily looking for excuses, looking for reasons to sort of say, oh, it's all going to come crashing down, because we as Falcon fans want to see that, and so therefore we then must find the evidence to support that belief. You know, I think you really should look at sort of what they've been able to do and sort of say that as more, look at it as more something that you can emulate and potentially improve upon if you're the Falcons. So, as I've said before, you know, they've had three bites at the apple these last couple of years. They'll probably get a fourth or fifth this year, whether, you know, obviously we're going to be rooting against them achieving it by all means necessary. But, you know, five bites of the apple is something to emulate and try to achieve, that whether that comes for the Falcons in the next 5 years or next 6 years or next 7 years to get that, I think that's exactly what the Falcons want. So I certainly think rather than sort of taking the approach of let's find ways to snipe the Saints and look at why they're going to come crashing down, which is fine. Like, you know, there's certainly room to do that. I'm not going to stop anybody from doing that. I do think it's worthwhile, much more worthwhile from a football standpoint, particularly if, you know, you want to learn some lessons and see, sort of figure out some things of how the Falcons will be able to handle certain things in the future, by looking at it with a little bit more of an, let's say, objective lens that isn't just a Saints hater or whatever the case may be. So we'll see how that turns out for the Saints. Obviously, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, the Saints are going to win the Super Bowl. I'm not saying that at all. I just sit here and think that they clearly are the front runner for the division. And unless you think there's going to be, like, I think people looking for sort of external issues like the salary cap that are going to be the thing that take down the Saints. No, it's, if the Saints go down, it's going to be because, you know, this notion that Sean Payton can, you know, Drew Brees gets hurt, and this notion that Sean Payton can even take a Luke McCown caliber player and turn him into a competent backup, like, that winds up not being true because whoever they have replacing Teddy Bridgewater is so terrible that that's just not even a possibility. Or their defense just suddenly, whether it's injuries to guys like Lattimore or Cameron Jordan, just suddenly crumbles and all of a sudden they have a really bad defense. So I think it's going to be more internal issues, you know, those unpredictable sort of things like injuries to key players, that if the Saints are going to go down in 2020, it's going to be because of that, not because of, oh no, Drew Brees' contract costs too much money. I just think those things don't have as much impact on how, you know, things that actually occur on the football field that actually win and lose games mean as much as maybe some of us like to pretend, including myself, from time to time. You know me, I love to complain about a bad contract. But there you guys have it. I'm done talking. I feel dirty now having praised the Saints for as long as I did on this podcast. But it is what it is, begrudgingly. I will go take a shower. And you guys, we will be back later this week with more Falcons content. Of course, if you have questions that you want me to answer on future episodes, you can send them in via Twitter at Locked On Falcons, via Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or via email at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.